Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CQW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg, Akan, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of Nahiuwak and the Nakoda. I am your host, Isabella Swadis.
And I am your co-host, David Tefane.
On today's show...
Basically, what Canada is trying to do is to close the land border to all refugees.
We're being racial profiled.
We need understanding and a sense of hope to feel safe and protected by our policing system.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from CQW in so-called Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg, Akan, the homelands of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiuwak and the Nakoda.
Terry Quill, Donald Moose, Errol Green, Soleiman Fakiri, Sean Thompson. These are just a few among dozens of people who died over the last decade by police or prison violence in Canada. At a panel discussion on the evening of Sunday, October 6th, at the Magnus Eliasson Recreation Center in downtown Winnipeg, family members of those victims spoke in front of a crowd of more than 60 people to share their stories of pain and loss and demand answers to what they each in turn described as failures by the system to protect the human rights of their loved ones. This event was timed with the arrival of Yusuf Fakiri, whose younger brother Soleiman died at the hands of prison guards in December of 2016. Soleiman suffered from mental illness. Police had sent him to the Centre East Correctional Institute in Lindsay, Ontario. In Yusuf's words, his brother would eventually be returned to his family in a body bag.
Both his hands and legs were tied, pepper sprayed twice, in segregation the entire time, and had 50 bruises, according to the Ontario Coroner's Office. Those were the last few moments of Soleiman's life. All 50 bruises were inflicted by the guards, but no charges.
For more information and to find out how to help, go to the website justiceforsoli.ca. From Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg, Akan, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiuwak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Our next headline comes from Catherine Fisher of CJLY on Sinaixt traditional territory.
A study by Zurich's Crowther Lab indicates that restoration of the Earth's forest is the world's most effective solution to climate change available today. Dr. Jean-François Bastine, leader of the study, suggests that there is potential to increase the world's forest land by a third without affecting existing cities or agriculture. Once mature, these new forests could store 205 billion tons of carbon, which is about two-thirds of the 300 billion tons of extra carbon in the Earth's atmosphere. The study notes that Russia, the United States, Canada, Australia, Brazil, and China have the most room for new trees. Humans will need to act fast, however. The climate is already changing, and every year reduces the amount of land that can support new forests. Even if we are able to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, the area available for forest reforestation could be reduced by a fifth by 2050. According to senior author of the study, Tom Crowther, if we act now, this could cut carbon dioxide in the atmosphere by up to 25% to levels last seen almost a century ago. Crowther adds, it would take decades for new forests to mature and achieve this potential, which means we should protect the forests that exist today, pursue other climate solutions, and continue to phase out fossil fuels from our economies. The study is called Global Tree Restoration Potential, and it is available on the website of Science Magazine.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back. You're listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Just heard Winnipeg's arrived at 12:21 with the song Thinking About You from the album Hello Yellow. Now it's time for our feature stories.
In June, major changes to Canada's Immigration and Refugee Protection Act effectively closed the door on thousands of refugees pushed out by the U.S. by anti-migrant policies. Migrant justice groups had declared October 3rd a day of action to stop the migrant detentions. Some of those excluded are now being held in the Laval Immigration Detention Center in Montreal, where local community members gathered to express their support for the detainees. The protests would later march to the site of the new prison for migrants, the construction for which began August 5th, 2019. The following report on the October 3rd action in Montreal comes to us from CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting on so-called Montreal, the traditional and unceded territory of the Ganegahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
So maybe some of you guys know what the Safe Third Country is. Do you guys know what that is? So that's the agreement between Canada and the United States that says that the U.S. is a safe country for migrants. So if someone's crossing the border from the U.S. to make a refugee claim, for instance, the idea that, well, you can just stay there because it's safe. And because of that, that means that anyone who arrives at the land border trying to make a refugee claim in Canada not only can't make a claim, but will be turned back, or potentially will face deportation, not to the U.S., but to their country of origin. But what people found was that there was a loophole where if you arrive outside of an official port of entry, then you're not considered to be arriving from the U.S., and you could still make your refugee claim. So that's why everyone's crossing at Roxham Road, because it's not an official point, but once you cross in there, then you can still have your right to a refugee process. Well, I don't know if you guys saw, but there wasn't a lot of attention around it, but there was a little change in the rules that just happened this last summer. It was hidden inside a federal budget bill. But now what they're saying is that if you've made a refugee claim in a country that Canada considers safe, like the U.S., then you can't make a refugee claim in Canada. And a lot of people are watching with close attention what Trump is doing in the States and seeing how racist and terrible that is. But it's the exact same process that's playing out here.
And it's part of this bigger process where basically what Canada is trying to do is to close the land border to all refugees.
So we want to invite our comrade Mohamed Barry from the Committee for Status for the Ghanaians to speak to us.
Hi everyone, I'm here to support for those who are in jail here. It is not a detention center, it is a jail, because I have the experience, because I've been here when I was really sick. I had an accident here in Canada, in Montreal especially, and I had my crutches, I was handcuffed, and my hands and my feet, it looks like I'm not a human being. We are not human being. It's just simple. Just treat us as you treat yourself, as you treat your mom, as you treat your children. This is not the respect of the convention Canada has took in Geneva. They have to respect the human right. This is not respecting human rights. Putting someone in jail just because he's seeking asylum, he's seeking protection, and you treat him as a criminal, which is not fair. Are you okay with that?
No!
So, are you okay? So, what to do? We're going to fight the injustice. The administration has to change the way they are treating the migrant.
Canada is one of the few countries in the world that detains people for an indefinite period of time.
Yeah.
Brahim Toure was detained for 5.5 years under the risk of flight until 2018.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about Canada's particular immigration system that allows it to operate in this manner, and how they justify it?
Yeah, well, in the detention, in the issue of detention, there is always the issue of racism, to be very honest. When you go straight to the point, is that. And there is another part, which is the society hasn't been strong enough to stop that practice. Because most of the what is called advanced capitalist societies, they love to push people away, right? But in other parts of the world, people resist, and so that's why the policies change. In this case, I think we haven't been strong enough to stop that practice, racist practice of detention and deportation.
Okay. The government has proposed other methods that it calls alternatives to detention.
Yeah.
One method is to track migrants via GPS cell phone surveillance and force them to report back through their telephones. Mm-hmm. How does CBSA justify surveillance as an alternative to detention, do you think?
Yeah, well, the government now is saying we won't stop detention. What we are going to do is to be nicer. Like, we are going to do nicer detention. We are going to build new detention centers that are, you know, warmer and have an area for kids and good warm stuff. No, the problem is not the condition of detention. The problem is detention itself. We want to abolish detention. People shouldn't be detained and keep there for months or years or even days just because of the fact that they are looking for safety and security.
That report was supplied by Ryan Adamian and Noor Daoud of CKUT 90.3 FM with editing assistance from Omay Rahem Tula of the Groundwire Coordination Team.
An early October snowstorm forced the evacuations of thousands of people from 13 First Nations communities to Winnipeg. The following reports on their ordeal and efforts to accommodate them comes to us from Michael Welsh of radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. On occupied Anishinaabeg Akin, homeland of the Métis Nation and a historical territory of the Nahiyuwak and the Nakota.
Manitoba is still recovering from one of the most severe winter storms ever to hit the province in the month of October. Of particular concern were the 16 remote First Nations whose residents were forced to evacuate their communities and flee by the thousands to shelter and heat in the city of Winnipeg. These visitors to Winnipeg, many of whom had similarly been evacuated during the major floods of 2011, encountered a great deal of frustration and stress, not to mention racist attitudes from city dwellers and officials. A few shared their thoughts about their ordeal.
My name is Garnet, Chief Garnet Woodhouse, Pnemudang First Nation. Stress levels are high because, especially our elders are being, the way they are accommodated. Sometimes they'll just stay in one night in a hotel and move there to another hotel. Not everyone's going to vote from our community because they're more concentrated on how to go through each day while they're here, and they have to find accommodations for the next night as well. So at least they're looking forward, they're looking forward to go back.
My name is Shirley St. Clair. I'm from Dauphineur First Nation. We have two fridges and two freezers full of meat. They're all gone, and we're hoping for an answer before we go home, because that's a lot of food that got wasted. And it's not only us, it's the other homes too. We were in 2011, we were told we'd pack overnight bags. We were told again that this time, and we've been here 9 days. But last time it was 8 years. 8 long years we had to be in the city, and we lost a lot of our young people to street drugs. And they're still out there today. It's been 8 years. We're being racial profiled. They're saying we're wasting tax dollars. Excuse me, but we're not wasting anybody's money, just our own money. Because we know there's money there for our First Nations people. And so many times we get criticized, even when we go into the stores, we're being watched as if we're going to steal. We're not thieves.
Laura Ray is a resident of the downtown neighborhood known as West Broadway. She's a trans woman, has been active with Bear Clan Patrol, the Indigenous-led community group providing personal security for inner-city residents, and has started a project supplying food and supplies for those in the community facing food and shelter insecurity.
As a trans woman, as a white trans woman, as someone who transitioned quite late, already having a great deal of social capital, I'm pretty much as good as it gets, you know, as a trans person. But even as good as it gets, I think overnight I developed a tremendous understanding and empathy I didn't have before, and realized a lot of my, the work and the things I would do to help really fell under the concept of charity, providing things without really considering that there was no necessity for this to exist in the first place. We're in an indigenous community. This indigenous community happens to be a shelter. And somebody is suffering a medical situation that is clearly based on something physiologically that's happening to them. And the first responders come in, they're standing over her, and the one says in a voice completely empty of any human compassion, so what's going on here tonight? And to me, from a medical care standpoint, what's going on here tonight doesn't sound like somebody that's asking about a medical crisis specifically, but that somehow this might have been something that somebody brought upon themselves. The woman from Fisher River and I just meet eyes, and we have a consensus on a mutual, right, understanding of what's wrong with this picture, right? We can fix these problems. We can identify what's going on, but we just need all hands on deck, because the more we help the indigenous people, the more they will be able to be elevated and returned to the place that they were at when we decided to come onto their land and take, which is to help and support and help us survive. And they can do the same as we reach another crisis at the end of the world, because they have been doing it for centuries and they know how to do it. And they're our teachers, and we have to help our teachers be strong so that they'll be there for us when we need them.
From Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
In the midst of Toronto's deadly shelter crisis and cuts to crucial health and social services under the Ford government, members of the city's downtown Eastside community took the streets for the 10th annual Reclaim the Streets March on October the 10th, beginning at the Regent Park Community Health Center, which offers harm reduction services and support for users, sex workers, and people experiencing transient and ongoing homelessness. Community members directly affected by marginalization, criminalization, and violence by the police and predators alike demanded structural change and justice. CKUT's News Collective brings footage from the rally and march before marchers occupied Sherbourne and Shooter to commemorate the women, trans, and non-binary people who've gone missing or murdered on the corner.
Today I wanted to speak on the war on drugs and criminalization of community members. Stop criminalizing and policing of homeless street active people in the downtown Eastside. Gentrification downtown Eastside has been an increase of policing towards people in our area. We're being criminalized because we're homeless, just because we are visibly trans, sex workers, black, brown skin, or indigenous. Our community is diverse in race and class and gender, and that's not going to change around here. We need safe streets, safe spaces that are welcoming without stigma and discrimination due to our lifestyles and our social locations. We need our community members and police to support the war on tainted drugs, support the need of OPS and outreach programs that keep people connected and alive.
Decriminalization of sex work and drug use. Safe space now, open low threshold shelter for women, trans, and non-binary people. Safe, decent, affordable social housing and expropriation of 214 and 330 Sherbourne Street. Reinstatement of funding for all overdose prevention sites that provide life-saving services. Enhanced funding for harm reduction programming and the development of a province-wide safe supply program. Increase OW and ODSP rates, and that all cuts to OW and ODSP will be stopped.
Let's remember all our friends that have passed due to tainted drugs and the lack of government compassion on the lives of people that use drugs. Our lives matter.
We're all here tonight to stand tall for our loved ones who have lost their lives to violence, within our community and the streets of Toronto. Tonight, justice has been served for Melissa Cooper. Cooper's murder and brutal slaying in April 2016 was devastating to her family and friends. Ian Albert O'Hab was convicted to second-degree murder in January 2019.
My name is Marcy. I'm Native. I was dislodged from my biological roots because of the 60s group. That kind of trauma at the beginning of your life leaves you with a sense of uncertainty and a constant feeling of not belonging. I've been stopped 5 times, once in the last year. I've been beaten up by police officers in probably every district. I do not believe feeling vulnerable to acts of violence should be considered normal. I do believe we all have the basic right to feel safe and protected. We need understanding and a sense of hope to feel safe and protected by our policing system, not raped by it. After experiencing violence, we need a calm environment and the reassurance that we can communicate our desperation and that we will be heard and believed. We need empathy from those being paid to protect us. Sensitivity training shouldn't be a punishment, but a prerequisite to being a civil servant, mandatory. This is not just reclaiming the streets, it's reclaiming our confidence, dignity, and reclaiming our voice.
That report was put together by Gao Mahadevan and the CKUT News Collective.
You're still listening to Groundwire Community News, broadcasting from coast to coast and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report. CKUW's Michael Welsh brings us the following report on the unexpected shutdown earlier this month of Pacifica radio station WBAI in New York City and complaints that this action was illegal and constitutes a coup attempt by a rogue faction of the Pacifica Board of Directors.
On Monday, October 7th, the interim executive director of the Pacifica network of radio stations arrived at the headquarters of the progressive non-commercial radio station WBAI in New York City and proceeded to shut down the station, lock the doors, change the locks, and fire all 12 paid staff and 168 radio producers. The programming was changed to broadcast a curated collection of original content produced by stations in the Pacifica network. The official pretext for these actions was the unsustainable financial shape the station was laboring under, necessitating a fundamental restructuring. Supporters of the anti-establishment broadcaster have framed the action as a takeover, a coup, prompted by corrupt elements within KPFA and the Pacifica National Board. They believe that the financial problems are being used to justify a sell-off of the station and its assets in order to finance other struggling stations within the Pacifica network, including San Francisco Bay-based KPFA. Daniel Borgstrom is a longtime observer of KPFA and sits on that station's local board.
What the people in New York suspect, and a lot of others, including myself, what we suspect, is that they're purposely setting this up so that this will go into a bankruptcy court in order to restructure Pacifica in the radio democracy and sell WBAI and use the money for other at the other five stations. They would sell the signal. And I've heard varying numbers on what the signal may be worth. I've heard as low as $20 million. I've heard as high as $200 million.
Alex Steinberg is a listener delegate to the Pacifica National Board from WBAI and currently serves as the chair of the Pacifica National Board. He remarks on the timing of the shutdown.
The timing of the shutdown was very interesting. It happened at the conclusion of the first week of our October fund drive, which was very successful. We were taking in an average of about between $9,000 and $10,000 a day, and we had a couple of days where we raised like $13,000. It's almost as if it was designed just to cripple us. And some people, including myself, believe that it was in fact the intent.
Both Alex Steinberg and Daniel Borgestrom are convinced that beyond the prospect of making money from the sale of WBAI to fund the other stations in the network, there's also an interest in shutting down radical voices.
I believe there is a certain political push to try to suppress programming that challenges mainstream points of view, that is more radical, that in the U.S. context would be anything much to the left of the moderate wing of the Democratic Party. Many of the people behind this maneuver have some deep roots in the Democratic Party establishment in the Bay Area.
Are basically aligned with the Democratic Party. It's the fund the air on KPFA. Guests who come from the CIA quite openly. I would not object to having those guests on the air, but we need to have our side there too.
The people representing John Verniel and his associates, who claim to be speaking in the name of Pacifica, although they actually only represent a minority of the Pacifica National Board, they went into court last week and tried to they did succeed temporarily in removing the case from New York State Court into federal court, where apparently they thought they'd have a better opportunity to defend themselves. And we went to federal court today, and the judge issued a ruling that said the federal court has no jurisdiction in this matter whatsoever, and it's been pushed back into the state court. I represent the majority of the board of directors of the Pacifica Foundation, and I'm pretty confident we will prevail. But at the moment, the case has been sent back to the New York State Court.
More details on the case can be found on the website, pacificainexile.org. For Groundwire, this has been CKUW's Michael Welch.
That was our community radio report. Up next, a short musical break.
Spread across the papers, lit across the screens. They say there's something coming. I say it's always been. I say it's always been.
Heard Burnstick, comprised of the duo of Nadia and Jason Burnstick, with their song Pay No Mind from the album Kia Now. That's it for the edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabeg, akin the homeland of the Métis and historical territory of the Nahiwak and the Nakota. Headlines this week were written by Catherine Fisher and Michael Welsh.
We also thank Gal Mahadevan, Ryan Adamian, Noor Daoud, the CKUT News Collective, and Ome Rahamtala for their contributions.
Music this week was from the 1221 and Burnstick. I've been your host, Isabella Swadis.
And I've been your co-host, David Devane.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwire.com. news.ca. Thanks for tuning in.